Off now here on RNIB Connect Radio to St Ives for a journey through the life and work of one of 20th century's most inspiring artists and a true pioneer of modernism sculpture with the exhibition Barbara Hepworth, Life and Art at Tate St Ives. The exhibition not only showcases over 30 examples of Barbara Hepworth's work, but also explores her links with Cornwall too. Giles Jackson, Assistant Curator at Tate St Ives, joins me now to give me a bit of an insight into the life and work of Barbara Hepworth, and maybe, in a way, a bit of a homecoming for this exhibition too. Hello, Giles, and welcome to RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Giles, before we talk about some of the work that is on display in the exhibition at Tate St Ives, I wondered if you would mind telling me why Barbara Hepworth decided to move out of London at the outbreak of World War II and set up a home art studio and workshop in St Ives.
Well, by 1939, Barbara Hepworth and her husband, the artist Ben Nicholson, and their four children were living in a studio in Hampstead, and they realised as war was coming that it would not be a safe place for the family. So they decided to move to St Ives to stay with some of their friends, Adrian Stokes and Margaret Mellis, as a safe refuge in the war, but also perhaps a new artistic beginning for them as well.
Was she sort of inspired by, I suppose, like many artists, to the sort of light of Cornwall and that kind of thing and the sort of surroundings?
Absolutely. Through the 1930s, she'd become interested in Cornwall, and particularly Cornwall's Neolithic standing stones, and her works at that time had been already compared to them. And they, of course, became a bigger influence when she was here. And she also very much recognised the light, as you said, and was completely transfixed by the landscape when she arrived here. It really became a crucial part of the work she made for the rest of her life.
We all may be aware of some of Barbara Hepworth's iconic works such as Mother and Child, but Art and Life delves a little bit deeper into her early studies at Leeds School of Art and her time at the Royal College of Art in London, her travels around Europe, and also her time living in London too. Giles, would you be able to give me a bit of a flavour of Barbara Hepworth's work during these early days in Leeds and obviously at the Royal College of Art, and her travels around Europe and her time in London? And is this sort of explored through some of the work in the exhibition, and maybe give us a glimpse of the journey of her work during those times too?
Yes, so one of the opening sections of our exhibition looks at those early years from the 1920s right up to 1940. Hepworth was born in Wakefield in the West Riding of Yorkshire in 1903. And although she moved away from Yorkshire in her 20s, she recalls experiences of the landscapes of the West Riding and how those, in some indirect or perhaps direct way, inspired much of the work she made later. And then she went to Leeds College of Art and the Royal College of Art, where she was learning sculpture, but the traditional form of sculpture at that time, which was to work in plaster and then to have a technician or engineer cast into bronze. And so the really formative time for her was when she left and was awarded a grant to travel to Italy. And she spent some time in Florence, where she met her first husband, John Skeeping. And together they explored traditions of direct carving from that part of the world. And by direct carving, I mean taking a piece of stone or wood and carving it into the surface rather than building something up in plaster. You reduce down from the outer shape of the stone. So from that time, she was making figurative works. Through the 1920s and into the 1930s, those figures became increasingly abstract. So the forms were simplified and smoothed until she came to some of the seemingly very abstract forms that would define the rest of her practice all the way through to the 1970s. So tall, standing, kind of almost totemic forms, curved forms with piercings in the center, and then multiple forms shown together in unison with one another.
And when she did move down to St Ives, how well did she fit in with the people around St Ives? As I think some critics have sort of, I suppose, described her hair as maybe being a little bit cool and restrained during those times. And that might just be their opinion, but I suspect it's possibly because she was very much a driven artist and also very much focused on her work at that time.
Well, she and Ben Nicholson and other artists such as Naam Garbo arrived in St. Ives, discovering an already very established artistic community that was connected to traditions that perhaps Hepworth and the others were rejecting in some ways. They were bringing their experience of the international constructivist movement, for example, to the St. Ives art scene. So in any kind of scenario like that, there are bound to be some creative differences between artists working together in a community. But I think when she arrived here, she brought some of those outside influences, but also was very responsive and open to the place, the people, and the landscapes of Cornwall, which would be combined with those constructivist tendencies in her work. And she was also, throughout her life, because she came in 1939 and she lived in St. Ives all the way until her death in 1975, she was a staunch advocate for various local issues and very passionate about this place and the community.
Yeah, and I think obviously Cornwall and the art community around St. Ives was very much an inspiration for her with the landscape and the people. And how has that sort of, I suppose, showcased in maybe a bit of a reshaping of this exhibition now it is here in St. Ives?
Absolutely. So now we have the exhibition here, we really thought it'd be a great opportunity to focus on that time she spent in St. Ives, which dominates the exhibition. And we have a section that looks at those early years from the early 1940s towards the early 50s, where she was really responding to everything she saw around her. So she made a work that is called Pelagos, which is the Greek word for sea. That is a sort of a spherical form that's cut away in the center, almost in the shape of a wave. And the interior is painted in a very light blue, and it has strings connecting to two points of the wave form. And this was inspired not only by the literal waves that she saw in the sea, but the view from her studio in Carbis Bay out into St. Ives Bay, where she described almost the two arms of the bay, almost like an embrace, and a feeling of closeness and intimacy, but also openness out to sea. And as with many of her sculptures from this time, she not only depicted the landscape, but wanted to show how the landscape affected her and her body and all of her senses, and trying to somehow capture that experience through sculpture.
And I suppose she must have been very inspired by the natural world around her, as you say, the sort of the landscape of Cornwall, the sea, the sort of iconic sort of craggy landscape of it as well, and sort of, I suppose, the buildings and things like that, which must have been very inspirational, but also taking that into her sculptures as well.
Absolutely, yes. There are many other works that, even with their titles, directly reference place names here in Cornwall. So in another section of our exhibition where we are focusing on her work in metal, there's this incredible work called Curved Form Trevelyan, which is sort of almost a U-shape with two arms reaching up to the sky. And this was made in response to one of her favourite places, which was the Trevelyan Hill just behind St. Ives. And she used to climb to the top, and the work is made almost as a way of capturing the feeling of facing the setting sun across the Atlantic, she said, and where the forms of the hills and the valley down to the sea seem to enfold the watcher and lift them towards the sky. So this was amongst many of the works that were really sensitive to the landscapes of Cornwall.
And there's one thing which I wasn't quite aware of. Barbara Hepworth also got involved in stage design and was also very much interested in science and technology. Does that sort of come across in the exhibition? Are there examples of her stage work and her interest in science and technology on show in the exhibition as well?
Absolutely. Now, when we approached this exhibition, and particularly adapting it to our spaces, we really wanted to focus on the lesser known aspects of her practice and the more kind of interdisciplinary interests that she had. And in 1951, she was invited to design the stage set and costumes for a production of Electra, the ancient Greek play, at the Old Vic Theatre in London. So we are showing some photographs of this production and also a sculpture called Apollo that was part of the set for that. And in 1954, she was approached by Michael Tippett to do the same thing for his production of The Midsummer Marriage. And we have a very large reproduction of the performance in progress there with these amazing geometric costumes that she designed and metallic forms that would be held by the actors and a huge stage set. And we're also lucky enough to have some of the original drawings for those costume designs on show. So she was interested in movement throughout her career and the interaction of bodies. And so when she had the chance to approach these productions, she took these ideas almost a step further to not only understand how the visitor would experience their sculpture, but also how her sculptures and her works could be embodied through the movement of dancers and figures. And I guess another really important influence on her work throughout her career were new developments in science. So from the 1930s, she became very interested in crystallography. And towards the end of her career in the 1960s and 70s, she was fascinated by space exploration. And she had a very formative visit to the Goonhilly Earth Station here in Cornwall, which has these amazing satellite dishes. And when it was opened in 1962, not long after, she was allowed to ride on one of these satellite dishes as they rotated. And the literal forms of these satellite dishes became influential to her work, but she also became very interested in planets, in the moon and the sun and spheres, and somehow capturing these in very simple geometric forms throughout her work in the 1960s and 70s, which is the focus of the final section of our exhibition.
Oh, it sounds really interesting. Giles, what do you think visitors will take away from coming to see Barbara Hepworth's art and life here at Tate St Ives?
I think visitors will see an artist that is fairly well known already, but will hopefully find many aspects of her practice that they weren't aware of, with thinking about those unusual influences on her practice. And through the final section of the exhibition that explores her interest in space and also spirituality, we also tried to convey that at the end of her life, she was constantly evolving. So although she was in declining health, new ideas kept emerging, and she made more work in the 1960s, in the years before she passed away, than she had for the entirety of her career before that, which I think just demonstrates the creativity and the veracity of her output and that need to constantly evolve and change as an artist, which I think stands her in great, great stead today and is part of the reason she has such a rich legacy that we can happily celebrate through our exhibition.
Well, Barbara Hepworth, Art and Life continues at Tate St Ives until the 1st of May 2023, and details about the exhibition and access at Tate St Ives can be found by either emailing visiting.stives@tate.org.uk or calling 0173 679 6226. Well, thank you very much indeed, Giles, for joining me here on RNIB Connect Radio and telling me more about the exhibition Barbara Hepworth, Life and Art at Tate St Ives.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.